Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X/Twitter, and Instagram. Where aren't we live? That's my big question. I'll tell you where.
A billboard in Times Square. A lot of people watching
there. Surprise. Surprise. We are in Times Square, right? We're not in Times Square. Sorry, but we are coming to you maybe later a bunch of different places as well, as I have been doing the past couple of weeks. We're almost out of time here, folks. Google Podcast is shutting down at the end of the month. If you're still subscribed there, don't do that. We're everywhere else. Spotify, Amazon, other stuff on Android, YouTube Music for some reason. Check us out wherever, you know.
That's the hang. That's where I'm spending a lot of my free time.
YouTube. Well, listen, where I'm spending my hang is right here on Comic Book Club, because we got a ton of amazing guests tonight. So I want to jump right into it, if that's okay.
Oh, I thought maybe you guys would talk about how you guys saw each other in person a little bit. You
know, we did, but we had
a secret meeting without me.
No, Pete, you were there. We put up a picture on the Patreon Slack and you were there all crouched down and hunched over like a little beast.
What?
Check it out. I'll show you later, or I'll bring it up later. Tell you what, why don't we chat about that before
we audience questions?
Because yeah, we don't want to make our guests wait around. Let's bring the first one.
Nice.
He is a returning guest back with Lycan, Solomon's Odyssey Chapter 3, which is now on Kickstarter. Ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Robinson. Dennis!
Hey!
Welcome back to the show. Good to see you. Thank you for having me back. Oh my gosh. Excited to have you back here. So, don't remember if we, I think we had you for the first chapter, maybe?
No, it was the second.
Second chapter. Okay.
Yes.
This has been a journey. This has been your own odyssey, getting it out there.
It's long journey odysseys.
Yeah, yes, and speaking of long journeys, I'm glad you made it out of the woods. I saw the Kickstarter video and I was really worried about your well-being.
So the Kickstarter videos are this weird, like, goofy sort of ongoing story that I do that has really nothing to do with the books, other than it's just kind of like the original Wolfman, just told from a really goofy perspective. So the first one, me wandering around the woods like you were talking about, and then the second one, I'm being chained up in the basement by my buddy in overalls for some reason, and then the third one, I wake up in the woods covered in blood and gore.
Yeah, you got the little hand.
There's like a hand there and whatnot. Yeah. So like every Kickstarter, the video would just kind of keep continuing the little side story.
Wow, that's great. With the fourth issue, you're just going to be dismembered in a fridge somewhere. But that's very cool.
Yeah,
this got out of hand.
We'll talk about the book. I know it's been a couple of years since we have you on. So sure. Do you want to give the pitch for anybody who is hearing about the book for the first time?
Sure. So the Lycan Solomon's Odyssey series is essentially the story of the world's first werewolf. So it's a little horror, a little mythology, a little venture, a little history. The first book in the series was the origin story, and then each book after that kind of goes into different themes, different regional mythologies and folklore and monsters. So, for instance, this third book that just came out, I am summarizing that one as H.P. Lovecraft meets Gilgamesh. So cosmic horror, gods, things like that.
Yeah.
Fun.
Since this is, you've done Kickstarter multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we asked you this probably the last time, but I'll ask it again. What have you learned that you've applied here? Because looking through this Kickstarter, first of all, you're successful. Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats.
You got your goal, so that's
awesome.
But
always the best thing.
This is very, I've seen a lot of Kickstarters. This is very well organized, very well thought out. You answer all of the questions that people might have about the stuff. So I assume that's one of the things that you learned, is just like, hey, get ahead of all these questions. But
sure.
Talk to me about what that process has been like.
Well, so I start doing research on Kickstarters like a year out before I actually launch. And I started that with the first one too. But there was still a bunch of things that I couldn't read about that I had to learn the hard way. And the main thing that I was even messing up in the last one that I fixed around for this time is not picking rewards that end up costing me more than what I'm actually charging. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, in the second one, I got these glow-in-the-dark t-shirts. Super simple stuff. Cool. Wouldn't think anything of it. And I got a quote for it. But then when I went to go buy them, the quote wasn't actually accurate. So every time somebody backed at the level that was a t-shirt, I lost $5.
Oh, and you're like cursing your previous self and that person.
Yeah. So now before the anything even started, I made a spreadsheet and I said, okay, this is how much the item actually cost me. So this is how much, you know, we're going to charge for it. And that whole, and I did a whole breakdown on the spreadsheet, you know, what's the cost versus profit ratio for every single one of the reward tiers and all that jazz. So I was much more detailed this time around just to make sure I didn't have that same, you know, issue pop up as last time. Other than that, it's just been kind of slowly building things up each time. This is the first Kickstarter where I managed to get on the Projects We Love, the very elusive Projects We Love tag. So I was super, super happy about that.
That's cool.
I'd say that's the biggest thing that I've learned and sort of fixed is just making sure I didn't have a reward that ended up costing me. And then another one, which is a lesson I learned from the last one, is don't pick rewards that rely on too many other people. So for instance, I'm a podcaster, been podcasting for 8 years, got a lot of friends that do podcasts as well and voice acting and stuff. So I figured, oh, it would be fun to do an audio version of the book where it's like voice acted. So I needed like 10 people. So I had to coordinate 10 people's schedules and like just didn't hear back from like three or four of them.
Very hard.
Yeah. And then so it just kept hitting. And then I tried to recast and it would just hit another wall, So I was like, okay, we need to stick to rewards where I only rely on like one person or I do it. Either way.
So the big takeaway is don't trust other people.
Exactly. Yeah. In any walk of life, just never trust anybody. It's fine.
Operate in a vacuum. That's the way we do it. It's interesting. I feel like this is part of a larger story that anyone we talk to in comics these days is like, yeah, I am a business head. I manage shipping. Like, I feel like it's such a multi-skill job now. When I feel like when we're younger and even, you know, 10 years ago, it was like, yeah, I'm a writer. I found an artist and we pitched our book. Yeah. What can you give us sort of the breadth of skills or what's the strangest skill that you're, do you have an MBA essentially now?
No, I have a, so I, my college background is in psychology, funny enough. No, by day I'm a consultant. I make little corporate animated propaganda videos for various companies. So it has nothing to do with what I do in my, you know, for this stuff. But so I'm the writer creator and I then work, I put the art team together and then I work with them every step of the way. So I'm involved in all that. So then I'm also, I guess, kind of producer in that sense as well. And then I run everything else myself. So the Kickstarter, I'm, you know, trying to put together the pieces by, you know, contacting various people, being like, hey, can you do this thing for me? And then paying them, obviously. And then, you know, getting it all and putting it all together and then doing the videos and, you know, writing everything up. That's all me. So I am sort of overseeing everything and kind of trying to pull everything together. So I would say that the weirdest thing, the weirdest skill, well, for me is just doing conventions. It's not even really necessarily related to the Kickstarters. I did 27 conventions last year, which I do not.
That's so many.
Yeah, no, there were two times where I had three straight months every week at work. All week, go to a convention. Work all week, go to a convention.
For 27 flus. That's crazy. Yeah. That's gonna be a lot of
Didn't get sick at a single convention last year.
Congrats.
I got sick when I went on vacation, but I didn't get sick at a convention. Yeah.
You gotta always be on convention. A, B, C. Always be conventioning. There we go. I figured it took a second.
There it is. Working conventions is such a weird skill. Because like most people I know that are vending at conventions, like, all the artists, we're all just sort of introverts, but that doesn't really work in a sales capacity. And I'm not the carnival barky type. That makes my skin crawl. I can't do it. Like, I just can't do it. My first editor, he flips hundreds and thousands of books at shows. I cannot do that. He gets in front of the table. He's flipping around his bookmark. And like, you blink and you've bought 10 books before you even realize what's happened. I can't do that. If somebody lingers at my table for more than a second, I just ask, do you like werewolves? And if they say yes, go into the pitch and then, you know, go through all that stuff. But again, you have to be like,
what if they say no? What do? You scratch them?
No, usually. So if I say, there's two responses other than yes. And one is no, I like vampires, or just no. If it's no, I'm like, all right, well, it's nice talking to you. Or if it's vampires, I'm like, well, you can like both. I like vampires too. I just like werewolves more. And then they just sort of shuffle along.
If you're a vampire fan, werewolves is like the secondary buzz. It's like, I don't drink tequila.
Have you tried, if you like werewolves, you'll like Lycan's Odyssey.
So in that vein, I have a Patreon, and my buddy and I, the only thing that's on it really is just a podcast that me and my buddy do. Yeah. And he came up with a name, Like and Subscribe.
That's better.
That's great.
I quit. This is why you shouldn't trust. Don't trust podcasters. Bad ideas like what I just gave you. Just to get back to the concept of the book, though, it sounds like you've really blown out the plot in a big way with this issue. Talk about that a little bit. Have you raised the stakes exponentially in terms of what's going on?
So I typically like contained stories. I'm building the universe, but like the story itself still only takes place in this particular book in a city that we made up for the book anyways. And so while there are cosmic horror threats and gods and all this stuff, and technically, yes, the stakes could threaten the rest of the world. It's really just this little self-contained story in this city. But again, the idea is with each of these books, A, really focusing on Solomon and his journey and like the different emotional impacts and, you know, him just trying to figure out what he's supposed to be doing with his life, essentially. But then also building up the rest of the world and fleshing it out and showing that, yes, there are actually way worse things out there in the universe than just a little old werewolf, you know, running around like cosmic horror, like, you know, gods in outer space and all this stuff. In the fourth book, we even I won't say who he meets because that one's set in Egypt, but it's explained like, oh no, there are like these beings out in space, and they're like, oh, what are their names? It's like, no. If you know their names, then they know you, and you don't want them to know you. So like, we're just gonna keep that, you know, just. But so yes,
we have a theory here. Michael Eamon says pigs in space. Is it pigs in space?
Pigs in
space. That's not how you say it. Thank you. That's not how you say that,
Alex.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry.
You got to
on space. So it sounds like you planned ahead, though. This is about the third issue. Are you done with the third issue at this point for the Kickstarter, or is there more to go?
You mean like the story in general or just this book?
This book, like, is it good to go, or is there more work?
Art is still in so the issue I've had is that I keep writing these books to be a little longer and a little longer and a little longer. Mm-hmm. So the first two books were about 72 pages each.
Wow.
This one's 96 pages.
Dang.
Wow.
The fourth one's 108 pages. So like they just keep creeping up there in length. And so we're on the last four pages of art. So it's almost done.
Okay.
And then the coloring is a little over halfway, and then the lettering is obviously a little bit behind that because it's a conveyor belt. So I just talked to the colorist today. He thinks that it'll be done in no later than 6 weeks. So by then, I should have, you know, all of the different rewards in terms of getting people to answer their survey questions so I can get their names in the book, make sure I have everything taken care of, and then I'll send it off to the printer at that point. But this one's – so the third book – is 3 out of 5 in terms of the first arc, but there's going to be 15 total books in the series. I have it all planned out all the way to the last page of the last book. It's just going to take a very long time to make these.
How long did it take you to plot that giant story out?
So I would say probably about 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
It took me 5 years to put the team together and get the first book done. So in that time, I've always just been kind of thinking, okay, then what comes next and what comes next and, you know, all that jazz. And I had an idea for what I wanted to do for the first 5 books for a long time anyways. And then since I had those 5 figured out, then I was like, okay, well then where do I want to go from there? And then sort of like bop, 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 just kept fleshing them out all the way up through 15.
When you say it took 5 years to put the team together, what does that comprise? Is that like meeting different artists? I'm curious
explosive
because that sounds like a
expert,
long time.
A lot of lunches.
Exactly. Exactly. So my first editor on the book was Henri Copin. So the reason why it took 5 years, I didn't know how to write a comic because I'd never done it before. So I wrote this weird mutant abomination that was like a comic script mixed with like a book that didn't really look good and it didn't really function properly. But the idea was to just get the story on paper so I could like finagle it from there. And if you look in the books, in the credit section, you'll see a number of names that say executive producer. Those are the people that read the first version of the books and gave me the feedback. And they're like, oh, you know, you should put some more information on this character or do this different or do that different, that kind of a thing. And then once I had these scripts sort of figured out, one of my friends, Shannon Tucker, who knows way too many people in the comics industry, like I don't understand how she knows as many people as she knows. But she used to, for instance, tour around with Jim Starlin for a while.
Wow.
He would have her come around to
cool gig.
He would fly her out to Hawaii and whatnot. So, yeah. So she's super cool and she knows everybody. But she had put me in touch with Henri Copin, who does the Yisun Shin series. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'll put you in touch with my first editor. So that way, you know, you can get that whole thing figured out. Well, that guy read my mutant scripts and said, there is nothing salvageable about these books. Not the characters, not the story. But if you want, you can pay me $1,800 and I'll show you how to write not this, but something totally different, but better. And I said, no thanks. And I was ready to, you know, wrap it up at that point. And then she went back to Henri and pitched the actual idea to Henri. And he was intrigued. So he said, hey, send me your weird mutant scripts. And then he read them. He's like, well, that's the problem. You just don't know what you're doing. He's like, I'll show you what to do. So he then became my mentor and he gave me like a script like format. And he taught me like, okay, this is how your panel should be. This is what's important to put in those. You know, this is how many panels per page you should do in general. This is how many captions per panel in general. This is what's important to put in captions because you don't want to put anything that you could be showing on the page in a caption. And like show, don't tell whenever you can. The captions are there to specifically like tell the audience something that they can't see just by looking, like an interior feeling or something like that. So he taught me all that. And then at that time it was like 2019 and his idea was to, you know, look for an art team. So he went on DeviantArt and stuff like that. And if you're familiar with trying to do it that way, you get a lot of submissions, not a lot of great stuff, but you get a lot to sift through. And he was going through a bunch of stuff too. And then COVID happened. And so everything kind of shut down for a bit. And then one of the artists that I know through the podcast, Botched, her husband used to work in Marvel in DC and said, hey, there's this Facebook group. I think it's called Connecting Writers and Artists, if memory serves me. And basically go in there, you put in like, this is what I'm looking for. This is the style. This is what I'm paying or whatever it is. And you just put that information and people will just submit portfolios to you. And that's what happened. People just started submitting stuff and the quality
that's awesome.
Way better, like way better than DeviantArt. And so then I had a much smaller set of people to sift through, but also a higher quality. So then I whittled it down from there. I found my artist, then I found my colorist. And then the letterer came over from Henri's team because it's the same letterer he uses on his books and he does a fantastic job. So I'm super happy to still have him. And then the original idea was the first book was going to actually be two books because you don't want your first book as an indie person to be 72 pages because it's just too expensive. But then COVID was a thing. So we didn't do the Kickstarter when we were supposed to. We delayed it to 2021. And when 2021 rolled around in September, well, the book was done, like both halves. So I said, well, screw it. I just put it back together.
Let's go.
72 pages. So, yeah, so that's sort of why it took 5 years because there was the whole journey of
That's an odyssey.
On paper. Oh, yeah. So there you go.
Awesome. Dennis, this is so great. I would say good luck, but clearly you don't need it at this point. You've already been funded. But regardless, people could check it out on Kickstarter until April 1st, I believe, right?
April 1st at 9 a.m. So your better bet is March 31st,
there
which
you go.
also happens to be my birthday. Definitely not.
Smart time to end your Kickstarter.
That's right. Awesome. Or a terrible idea if it didn't fund, in which case you'd have a really bad birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, it's great. But it's a great place to funnel birthday gifts.
Yes, that's exactly right. Definitely was the plan. Was just like, hey, you know, if you're saying happy birthday, maybe you want to go check out the Kickstarter. Maybe
easy gift.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Dennis, great seeing you.
Yeah.
Great seeing you. Congratulations and good luck. Looking forward to the next issue as well.
Thank you so much. Have a good one. Dennis. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, take care.
All right. Again, the project is called Lycan, Solomon's Odyssey, Chapter 3. It's actually Chapter 1 through 3 on Kickstarter now until April 1st, but really March 31st, unless you're a night owl, I guess.
I almost lost it on the above the brim comment there. That's some funny stuff there, Michael, in the comments.
Nice. Wow. Pete, okay. Very
obscure. You got to bring that stuff up so we can talk about it. But we don't have time because we got to bring in our next guest. He is one of the guys behind the Lake Como Comic Art Festival, which is coming up very rapidly. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Morger. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you guys.
Very excited.
He's got some art behind him already.
Yeah. Ooh,
yeah. There Almost you go. He's much. Basically a Pete is in an art festival 24/7. Stephen, this festival is pretty amazing. I wrote down some of the guests here. This is happening May 17th through 19th in Italy, in Lake Como. And some of the guests I just started to write down: Alex Maleev, Belen Ortega, Bill Sienkiewicz, David Finch, Elena Casagrande, Manuela Lupacino, Frank Whiteley, Frank Cho. And at that point, I was like, I'm only through the Fs, and this is already absolutely wild. This lineup.
It's unbelievable.
And not only
Pete
that.
Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, Alex Albin.
Yeah, I wish.
But one of the things that I think is also amazing is you have this incredible lineup that, for anybody who is watching the live show, I'll bring it up in a second and scroll through it so you can see more of this wild lineup. But you also limit it to 1,000 attendees, who I assume 95% of them are the artists that you're inviting.
Actually, no, they don't count against the 1,000, but we haven't gotten to 1,000 yet. So, you know, the story that I tell people, when we did our first edition back in 2018, you know, I had found the location. I'm in California, my partner's in Paris, but we decided to do it in Lake Como because of, it's just amazing. The facility and the location are both amazing. But we had Neil Adams, Adam Hughes, Frank Cho, Jim Lee. Wow. And at the end of the day, we had 85 people that showed up.
Wow.
And it was like, I was talking to my Italian friends and it was like, of course nobody showed up. And I'm like, what the hell? It's the best lineup.
It's got to be the happiest 85 people ever, though.
Yeah, a lot of those people were George Clooney, just to be clear.
The people that showed up were ecstatic.
Oh, but what I happened bet. Is jackpot.
What my Italian friend said is, nobody knows you. You've never put on a show over here. Your guest list is too good. Everybody thinks you're going to be a scammer and just the show, you know, we're going to be the Fire Festival or whatever that one was. And so it was just kind of like, you know, it was not the Field of Dreams. You build it and they will come. It was... You know,
you built it too well. You had your Babe Ruth rather than your Shoeless Joe.
Yeah, we've got those 85 people with their stories of able to sit back and you know, I had Neil Adams all to myself for the show type of story.
Wow, yeah.
So what led, given that you started with 85 people attending, what led with capping it at 1,000? What led to that decision?
So my partner Arno is one of the owners of the Pulp Comics chains in Paris. And he did the Paris Comic Expo. I did the Big Wow Comic Fest in San Jose, both of which had very similar models. You know, they're very artist-centric, creator-centric, but they were full-blown conventions. You know, t-shirts, Funkos, all of the stuff that you have. And I'm much more of an art and artist guy. You know, I know a lot of people. And so we both of our shows ended for reasons beyond our control, but Arno and I had gotten to be friends because we would compare notes back and forth. because neither one of us was one. You do a different show, you're the enemy. We, you know, we're sharing to make the shows better. And so we both lost our shows in 2015, 2016. I've been going to Lake Como for 30 years, and I just found this venue. And so I called Arno up and said, hey, why don't you come down? And both of us were pretty much burnt out about doing huge shows. I mean, my show was over 10,000 people the last year. His, I believe, was 17,000. And wow. It's just, there's so much work in putting on a big show that, I mean, it's unbelievable that what the guys in New York and San Diego and MegaCon can do just because of the logistics. Mm-hmm. And so when Arno and I were chatting, it was, I don't want to do a big show. And so the idea was, is let's focus just on art and artists. And rather than have to deal with the lines that you have at these huge shows, let's just cap it. And it made sense based on the venue. It made sense based on the location, because while there's a good number of hotels, it's not New York City where you've got, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of rooms available. And so it was just from a logistics point of view, so that we could run it as our limited team, we wanted to keep the attendance low. And we've continued to do that.
So what is the setup like then for this? Is it basically like a big artist's alley? Is there some other, are there panels around it? How does the convention actually execute on a daily basis if you go to it?
So there's basically, on Friday night, there's just a purely social reception. All the artists show up, it's fully catered, so full dinner, wine and beer, and it's just social. You get a chance to hang out with people in an 18th century villa that's right on the lake. And, you know, it works out good because you get to get the FaceTime with the artist. You get to know people from the social event, so that the next day when you go to the actual modern convention center that's next door, you know some people. But the way that the modern convention center is set up, it's funky because most convention centers are one huge room. This one is set up in we use about 10 small rooms that have anywhere from 4 artist tables set up to probably about 10. So you can kind of wander into the different rooms that you want, see who you want, you know, commission the art. If you want to get art commissioned for you, buy pages. We have a ton of dealers there, original art dealers as well.
Yeah.
So you've got the artists set up at their own table. And a chance to talk. I mean, one of the things that I came up with in the first one, because of the limited, you know, I think the ratio this year is going to be about 7 to 1, 7 fans per artist, which,
wow,
you know, as opposed to 10,000 to 1 at some of the bigger shows.
That's quite different.
We set up chairs on both sides of the tables because some of the artists were complaining that when they're, you know, you're standing over them trying to talk with them, they're always, you know, looking straight up. And so I came up with the idea of putting a chair there. You sit on the other side and you have much more of a conversation like we're having right now.
Wow. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's one of the things that I hope catches on, because the artists like it and the fans love it because they get to have some FaceTime with some of those artists that you were showing.
Yeah, do you get a lot of writers showing up since it's so artist heavy? They're like, you know what? I'm going to come over, spin by, say hi to some
people. Actually, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course.
It's funny because they're like, you know, why don't you invite us as a guest? And it's like, because we're an art festival.
Yeah, that's not our thing.
But last year, Jeff Loeb came. The year before, C.B. Cebulski came. I think Jeff is coming again this year, but that may not be correct.
That sounds like him. Mm-hmm. And I know still, Jeff, he'll roll through.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You still have space for 3 podcasters to come as well, I believe, right?
Oh, I don't think tickets are sold out yet.
Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting. Well volleyed. Smart. Well volleyed, Stephen.
Smart.
Well, sorry, we're going to be at the Writers' Convention, which is at in the basement of a Jersey City hotel. So it's a slightly different, slightly different location, but...
So this happens May 17th through 19th. There are tickets available, like you're saying.
Yes, there are.
In terms of tickets, I mean, you covered this a little bit, like, but what do the tickets provide? Is it just sort of access to go and walk around as per normal convention? Are there other aspects of it as well. What could you tell us about that?
We had three different tiers available, currently two. Four available, currently three. We have 1 day pass, 2 day passes. Obviously, 1 day pass gets you in Saturday or Sunday. 2 day passes get you in Saturday and Sunday. The 3 day includes the reception on the night before. So that's not for everyone.
Sounds classy.
We had a fourth tier, but that one's sold out, which was a different tier that had an original sketch from either Alex Ross or Bill Sienkiewicz.
Wow.
And so that came as part of the package. Both of their reps is a big supporter of the show. And so he's been helping out a lot, which has just been amazing. The one thing to keep in mind, if anyone is thinking about coming, especially those that are thinking about coming on the 2 and 3 day shows, is for the 2 and 3 day tiers, we have a free portfolio, hardcover portfolio, plates by, I think this year it'll be 25 different artists.
Wow.
All unpublished work. Artists will sign their plates at the show for free.
So
that's
cool.
Amazing.
You know, but this keeps, I think, getting the better. Cutoff is either going to be April 1 or April 8th or 9th ish, because obviously we need to have them printed, and we print them, you know, pretty much to order. So if we have 400 people in that tier, we'll probably print 450 to 500, enough for everybody that bought the ticket, enough to give a copy to the artists that are there, and then very few left that people can purchase if they want. You know, like if you bought a 1 day ticket, which does not include the portfolio, if you wanted it, you can get it. You know, we're working on, you'd ask some questions about what things to expect. Last year we had a special jam piece that was done. Paolo Serpieri did the pencils. Frank Cho did the inks.
Wow.
For some reason, those two just seemed to mesh.
That's cool.
We're going to expand that a little bit this year. I have a piece that Dan Brereton has done half of. I'm going to be delivering it, or have it delivered in Chicago, to Mirka Andolfo, who will be doing the jam piece with Dan on that one. It looks like Frank Cho will be doing another Italian master, but we don't have that in hand. And considering the subject matter, you can probably guess who we're targeting, who's been at the show the last couple years. Jordy Burnett actually asked to be introduced to Bill Sienkiewicz. And so we're going to do a torpedo piece where Jordy has done the pencils. I'm hopefully at WonderCon this weekend going to try to deliver the pencils to Bill. If not, I'll mail them to him. And then that piece will be done. And those will likely be available. Either we do a fundraising auction, but we also are likely going to turn them into prints if they turn out as well as we think. You know, so...
This is unbelievable.
Do you have a lot of people just like sobbing when they come into this convention? Just in the absolute beauty and amazement of everything.
Especially the people who are there, because that's where Padme and Anakin Skywalker tried to have chemistry. It's the same body of water. Like, that's
same body of water, but not quite the same. Was actually at the Villa Bobbianello, which is just up lake. And that's also where James Bond, Daniel Craig, after he got beat up in Casino Royale, where he recovers, was also the Bob Vanilla.
Wow. And also a bunch of worse movies where people had a ton of budget to spend on a beautiful location. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question. This lineup is absolutely wild. For anybody listening to the podcast version, please go check it out, because we scrolled through this stuff and every single line of people.
It's a who's who. It's unbelievable. Insane.
Do you have a white whale, though? Is there somebody who you just have not been able to get to this convention yet? Or is that something you don't want to talk about? You don't want to jinx?
No, I mean, the one that I would personally like to meet is Bilal. You know, you know, obviously some of the Japanese masters.
Right.
But to me, I've loved, you know, I don't know if you remember, God, it's probably been a decade now ago, time flies, that at the Louvre, they did an exhibition of Bilal's work. It's kind of like the Phantom of the Louvre.
Wow. Right.
And so it was the first time you had comic art on display at a museum like the Louvre. And it was just, that was mind-boggling. The books that he does are mind-boggling. You know, for those of you that haven't seen some of the albums that are produced in Europe, oh my God.
Yeah.
The work over there, some of the work is just outstanding. And yeah. So, you know, he's the one, because I've never, ever seen him at a show or advertised to be at a show. And I don't know if he's even open to it, but that would be my dream for the European guys. You know, for the American guys, it's obviously Alex, but he's, from what I understand, he won't be doing shows, but right. He's got an open invitation and, you know, they know it. So if he ever wants a trip to Italy, and we'll treat him really well, but
if there's anyone that can pull those folks in, it's you at the Lake Como Comic Fest.
Yes.
We're trying. We're trying.
Quick little slightly off Italy question, but this comes from the comments over on YouTube. Steven, what should a comics fan do in Paris? He's asking because you said you've done shows.
Oh, my goodness. Add a couple extra days. From a comic shop perspective, there's a number of them, but obviously I'm biased towards the Pulp chain because that's Arnaud's shop. One of the things that's funky about Paris is they tend to group businesses together. So on Rue Dante, where Pulp is located, half a block away, you've got the album store. Across the street, you have the album European store. Down the street, you have the Pulp toy store. Nice. There's probably 8 to 10 comic shops within one block.
Oh, fun.
In Rue Dante. And obviously they have them in other parts of the city. So that would be my recommendation, would be for the comic shops there. But there's also, which we don't have over here very much, a number of art galleries that focus just on comic art. There's a gallery 9, I think it's 9E up by Pigalle. There is the Daniel Mann Gallery, which is right on the Seine, both exclusively comic art.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I know there's a couple others that I'm blanking on. But I would definitely look for comic art galleries, look for comic art. And then I would do a little bit of trolling at the museums to see if there's a possibility that you've got a Bilal show or something like that at one of the major museums, because Europe definitely treats comic art much more as a true art form than we do. We're catching up, but they treat it much better, much more as great art.
Are you taking on a youthful ward or a Robin to your Batman that would need, could run around, fight some of your personal crimes, things like that?
Hopefully I'm not going to have too many of my personal crimes or else my law firm would not be happy.
Well, Steven, this is incredible. I am having serious FOMO just thinking about everybody having an amazing time at this festival. Good luck with it this year. If you do ever need a podcast, we will sell our souls. Right, guys?
Yeah,
we'll
be there. I'm there. I sold my soul already, but I'll get it back.
If you guys ever want me back, this has been fun.
Cool.
Very awesome. Fun. Thanks,
Steven. Thanks for coming on.
Take care. Congrats.
All right. Once again, the Lake Como Comic Art Festival is happening May 17th through 19th in Italy. Tickets are on sale now. I am super jealous of anybody who's going to go there. Oh, my gosh. All right, but I'm not that jealous because we have one more amazing guest that I'm very excited to talk to on the show. You might know him from his book from a couple of years ago called Stitches. That is one of the most lauded graphic novels of all time. He is back with a new book that is out called Werewolf at Dusk. Ladies and gentlemen, David Small. David, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Hello.
Thank you so much for your patience. Thanks for coming on. So excited to talk about this book. So this is, listen, you've been doing a lot of stuff, to be clear. Like, obviously our show is focused on comics and graphic novels. You've done 3 graphic novels. You've done Stitches, Home After Dark, and now this, Werewolf After Dusk. But you've been doing a lot of other books and a lot of other projects in the meantime. Yeah. What brings you back to graphic novels, though? Because Stitches was about your youth. Home After Dark extended that a little bit. Werewolf at Dusk is getting into the later years. Is it checking in at those different parts of your life, or what's your impetus here?
Good question. Forgive my voice, by the way. This is a botched throat operation.
Oh, gosh.
I grew up.
Yeah,
you know that. I think that's really the answer. Stitches I was really compelled to do that. It was just stuff I had to get out, so it was kind of a bibliotherapy, you might call it. But it worked. It worked nicely as a book, and Home After Dark came quite a few years later. It was really in response to some stories that a good friend of mine down in Mexico was telling me. And it was sort of like an ideal boys' youth stuff that he was talking about. That it's kind of like the teenage years that I wish that I'd had. And but as I kept drawing out Mike's life and times, it didn't feel right. I was telling somebody else's story, so I inserted a lot of my own adolescence in there, and it worked better. Along came, after a long, long time, came Werewolf at Dusk, which is three stories that. Two of them have been, one of them called The Tiger in Vogue, had been percolating in my mind for decades. I found it. I think when I was in college, it was a collection of surrealist stories, and this one just stuck with me. Surrealist stories are such crap, you know. automatic writing thing that... was their style. It generated some wonderful images, like, you know, the famous marriage of an umbrella and a sewing machine on an operating table. You know, that's unforgettable. But the story that came out of, who knows, you know, they don't have any beginning, no end. But then there was this one story about this tiger, which did stick with me for a long, long time. I just didn't know what I was going to do with it, if anything.
It's wild that there was that in surrealism, it was surrealistic writing anyway. It was like that you could go so far and just like, wouldn't it be weird if a tiger showed up? And it's like, oh yeah, it would be weird. But things have changed so much since that was sort of the way to get your piece out, to get your story out there.
Yes.
Well, one of the things, not to interrupt you, but that I was most curious about with this book, and you touched on a little bit, but versus your two previous graphic novels, which were very autobiographical, I think it's only the second story of the three that is technically touching on that. I assume, like you're saying, there are things in the first and the third stories that resonated with you that become part of this piece, but why go on that route? Why go the adaptation route instead of a third straight autobiographical graphic novel?
I haven't got that much interest in the rest of my life, I guess.
All right. Makes sense.
Most of the books that I've done have been other people's writing. Oh, good. I'm glad you have some pictures.
Yes.
It's a paucity of ideas, I guess, or a desire to write something so honest that it's inescapable. And I think it's more the latter. But I just don't have, and a lot of my things have been based on dreams. certainly the second story in this collection is straight from a dream I had. And it's kind of thrilling to me to be able to draw as well as I can and put those things, make them visual, to manipulate them a little bit, to make them more appealing to a common reader. That's my answer. I feel like these three stories are kind of linked thematically. They're all kind of all about stepping into old age. Mm-hmm. Two of them in a very personal way, one with an aging werewolf. And I don't know that much about werewolves, but I never considered one going into, you know, devolving into senility or decrepitude. There was a great idea of Lincoln Michelle's. And then the third story, the tiger, I call it the tiger in vogue, that's my translation, is about a society in old age, really, with a kind of soul sickness.
Yeah.
And it has such resonance for today, I couldn't help but be eager to do this one. You know, it's this tiger is dressed like a gentleman, and he puts on this kind of smarmy act, vaudeville act, with the help of this young lady. But it turns out that his nature, his savagery is all being controlled by the will of one man sitting in the next loge. And you'll recognize him when he comes on here. If the little man dies, he's described as a little man with pale skin and tired eyes, and kind of looks like sort of a bank clerk, which is exactly how Hitler was seen back in like 1919, when he was visiting the homes of rich industrialists and raising money for the newly formed Nazi Party. He was seen as a sort of a clown, which is exactly how Hitler, who am I talking about? I remember going to the pharmacist in 2019 and saying, I can't believe this guy Trump is running. he's a clown. He's not going to win the presidency. You know, there's parallel number one. It's a contemporary story about the rise of fascism in a metaphorical sense. And I don't know. Most people find it really disturbing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like in a lot of your work, everything, the prose is so sort of boiled down and simple and concise. Is that something that, do you start, do you have to edit it down as you go, or do you just write in with that clarity at this point in your career?
You know, I've done probably 60 picture books for kids.
Yeah.
And the ones that I liked best were the ones that had hardly any text.
Right.
Yeah. To me, the ideal is to do a book with, you know, absolutely no text at all. It's very, very difficult to do. But I think after all that experience with picture books, I do understand that there's a real... it's important for the text and the pictures to work together. It's important for any writer everybody thinks those things are so simple to write, but in fact, they're very hard because the pictures can tell so much, and the author has to allow for that to happen.
You mentioned earlier that a lot of these stories, and this is definitely something I was struck by while I was reading it, have dream logic to them. Yes. Or are specifically about dreams, like the second story. But it strikes me that they're a little bit more like nightmares in a way.
Those are more interesting.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to ask you about is, do you feel like this is confronting your nightmares, both real and in your head, or how do you view it?
I think it's like honoring them, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. I've had some absolutely remarkable dreams in my life, but there's really nothing more boring than listening to somebody else's dreams. You're great.
Unless you're in it, yeah.
Unless you know something about the life that they came out of.
Right.
And the most extraordinary dreams that I've had explain to me why my, you know, current life is so fucked up or whatever.
Right.
They put it into into these wonderful metaphors. And I think they worked so well in Stitches because that was all about my life as a child, as a young kid, and to throw in those dreams after a certain amount of information about the life had been delivered enriched the understanding of the life. So, if that makes sense.
I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you for sharing your life, your dreams, your nightmares with us. I mean, these stories are so kind of moving and also haunting that I know they're going to stay with me for a while. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Especially, Pete, you are an aging werewolf.
Yeah, I mean, don't give it away, but yes.
Yeah, first time you saw yourself on screen, right? I was making a joke. Bad one. This is a question from Derek over on YouTube. The art style seems very European. Who are some of your artistic influences?
Oh, okay. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Encyclopedic. Start with Daumier. Go on to, and then leap ahead to Ronald Searle. Shepard, the guy who did Winnie the Pooh, and when I realized that I had a good children's book the first time, I thought that's how I wanted to draw it. You know, people who could really... Oh, and then I think the biggest influence is a guy named Heinrich Kley. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
No.
He was a German painter of industrial scenes who suddenly... he suddenly disappeared, and then his work began appearing in a magazine called Simplicissimus, and these absolutely savage cartoons of often with dancing elephants and alligators, which were the source for Disney's Fantasia.
Yeah,
they stole that all from Kley.
Perfect, great. Of course they did.
Yeah. My influences have been numerous, obviously, but, you know, talking to you guys, I feel like I've stepped into the wrong room. I didn't read comics when I was a kid, except for Pogo.
Oh, so, nice.
That counts. Oh,
yeah.
That's respectable, eh?
Yeah.
Loved Disney movies when I was a kid, when, you know, we used to go to the movies once a year, and it was always a Disney movie.
So even though you don't have a ton of comic experience, like, I can comfortably say anyone who likes comics could pick up this book and be amazed. Like, reading this, I was like, first off, I'm young, obviously, based on the way I wear my hat, but like, this idea of a werewolf. Like being like, oh, I used to be able to do so much more stuff. I was like, wow, this is hitting hard.
Yeah.
So like, this is for everyone. But you're in the right room, I guess I should say.
Oh, thanks. I think that's because we're all influenced by cinema.
Yeah.
I think that's my biggest influence in terms of making these three graphic books as movies. Which I've studied as an art form since I was in college.
Awesome.
Well, and I would say also there's something, like you said, it's hard to write sparingly and have it match with the picture in a way that is, you know, profound. And that's what I think draws comic readers in. And anyone that can do that with, like, with the power that it requires is a success. I'm drawn to anything that I get to sort of put it together in my, it happens in my brain as opposed to something I'm consuming. And that's what I love about any sort of visual and storytelling piece of art.
I was a little worried with this collection that maybe there was too much text because I could do what I wanted with my own story, A Walk in the Old City, the middle story, which is based on a dream. I could treat that any way I wanted. But with the first one, Werewolf at Dusk by Lincoln Michel, there was no problem there because, in terms of text length, because Lincoln's story was so short. It was written for an NPR, old NPR show called Selected Shorts.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Originally. Is that still on? I don't know.
I don't think it's still on, but they will occasionally, you can hear they'll put it in This American Life or something.
Yeah. Like that. Yes, yeah. So, but the last one, The Tiger, it seemed text heavy. And
oh, no. Not to interrupt you, it is not. It is sparse and terrifying.
I think
the things that I was so struck by, we showed, if you're watching the live show, we showed some of the images, just the sparse images of a tiger holding a baby.
Oh my God.
Bringing it to
yeah,
its mouth.
Striking imagery.
You mentioned him already, but Hitler's presence throughout there, just slumped over in his chair. It's upsetting to read that story. Obviously, that's your intention. It is supposed to feel like this nightmare for the reader, and it really comes through. Not to plus you up, but I really do not think the text is imposing on it at all. It is exactly the right pace of that story.
Yeah, good. I agree. I'm just saying that was one of my worries.
Right, yeah.
All right. You're great. You're doing great, David.
Need constant reassurance.
Yes, of course.
Tell y'all.
Oh, man.
At this point, I'm curious, you've done one graphic novel, I think, every 10 years or so. Do you feel like I know you were saying there isn't more you want to say about your life. Are you jazzed about adapting stories or dreams like this? Do you want to do more of that? Or is it back to children's books for you?
Children's books have changed. When I began, it was back in the 80s. So I had examples like Tommy Ungerer and not so much Sendak, but I appreciated his stuff. It was much more sophisticated. And it showed me that the work of those guys showed me that the way to go for me was to try to write stories or to find stories that would amuse the adults who had to read the book 50 times a week.
Shouts. I'm here for that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You have kids, right?
I do, yes. If that's not clear.
I had kids at that time too. And so that was my goal to do that, but that's very, very hard. And then things, that was the zeitgeist then. And now all the books have some wonderful illustrations. Not all of them. There are a couple of people who are still doing good things, but the stories are gone. Characters are gone. Lovely candy colored art, but they all seem to me to be self-help books, you know.
Everybody's, yes. Because I miss the stories that I read when I was a kid used to have or were read to me had an edge to them or a reality. And now I feel like everything is soft.
Yes. Soft, careful.
Yeah.
I love you, Grandma books.
Yeah.
What kid wants to read that shit? You know, it's.
Yeah. I keep thinking about, we read The Magic Pebble to my kids recently.
That's
and they were like, great story. And it's like terrifying.
Yeah.
Yes.
But fantastic.
I will never forget it.
I still have a nightmare about like a child story. It was like a tiger just like walking in a circle and it wore a path down. And I was just oh my God.
Turned into butter.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's right. That's what I had in my youth too. You know, so grandmas are buying books, and I guess they buy a lot of them. But the kids, I don't blame them for not reading anymore, because the books, the kids' books are—they're just not interesting anymore.
Well, I would say not to contradict you, but I have a 9-year-old and a 14-year-old. The 14-year-old is very much onto like reading a bunch of YA stuff, and she's super into that. But my 9-year-old and all of his classmates, they're reading graphic novels. Like, I think that's kind of the main thing right now. You know, we had a mention of Captain Underpants in the comments here, but things like that, like Dog Man, Amulet, etc. Like, that's kind of where it is. And it's been kind of interesting to see that, because they do read. But to your point, they're not reading the same sort of children's books that maybe we read as kids or other people were making as kids, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I was interested to read toward the end of the pandemic. There was a summarizing thing that indicated that reading had gone up actually during the pandemic. But they were reading the old books, you know, they were reading the ones that we grew up in. They weren't interested in the new stuff. I hope I'm not offending a lot of your viewers with my view.
No, I'm
just tired of kids' books. I don't know. Yeah.
I appreciate it, especially because like that's what I'm trying to go back and seek out for my kids and find those older books that, if I don't remember all of them, we just read The Sweetest Fig, if you know that, by Chris Van Allsburg, I think is the name. And that has that sort of like dread to it.
Those books terrified me. The Mysteries of Harris Burdick, one of the most. The actual, like, everybody knows Jumanji for the movie, but if you go back and read the book Jumanji, it's pretty scary and pretty great.
It is pretty scary.
But I like that, because that pushes at the edges of their imagination. And that's what I wanted as a kid anyway. And so like that, I'm chasing that with my kids. Even if it's like getting too scary, we find the line as it is. But definitely always more indifferent.
Kids are different. When Stitches came out, we were having a dinner party at Times Square or somewhere. And I mean, Grand Central Station. They have a nice restaurant there, and the publisher had taken us all there. And I was seated next to this publicist I hadn't met before. And she said, I've got a boy. He's going on 11. And I gave him your book yesterday. I just gave it to him before bedtime because he likes to read at bed. And I said, tell me what you think in the morning. So in the morning, she said, well, what did you think of the book? He said, I liked it. There were two things I didn't quite get at first. I didn't know what that thing in the jar was. And then I figured out it was an unborn baby. And the other thing was, I guess David's mom wasn't really into men, right? And she said, right. And that was it. That was the only questions he had about it.
There it is.
All right. So my book can be read by an 11-year-old. That's
push that age down. Yeah, exactly. Open it up.
And my own grandson came to visit for the first time this summer. And he's 10 years old. He's read every Stephen King book ever.
What?
I mean, that's wild. That's wild. 10?
I didn't start
Pet Cemetery messed me up.
Yeah, I started reading those at 13, and there is no way nine-year-old is reading that. Absolutely not. That's crazy. David, listen, we've kept you for a bunch of time already. I don't want to keep you for much longer, but this book is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, congratulations so much.
On it.
Thank you.
Open for another one. So we'll see what happens.
That's
right. Awesome. All right. Have a great night.
Take care.
Good luck out there. Come back soon.
All right. There we go. Check out
Oh man, you got to. Some amazing stories. Really? They're okay. Gonna stick with you.
Werewolf at Dusk is the name of the book. It's out in bookstores everywhere. It's honestly phenomenal. Like, I liked all of it, but I will say I was really floored by that last story of the book.
The first and last. I mean, the first one is like Teen Wolf from the dad werewolf's perspective. God's sake, right over the plate for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, fun times.
And why don't we move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions.
I got a question. And
for all audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X/Twitter, not Instagram, but I guess we can check that. We can take a look. But we do have a question first from Pete LePage. Pete, what's
surprising?
How was it to see each other in real life?
Yeah. Great question.
Yeah.
Honestly,
the outside world like?
Well, Pete, I'll just mention you were there, as we all know. Here's a picture of us hanging out at the warehouse. There's me in the background. There's Justin. There's Nat. And there's you, right?
Yeah.
Hunched on the ground like a little gremlin. Crouched.
Yeah. Oh, look at you guys all hanging out. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Let me say, like, I had both my kids there. Alex's family was there. And honestly, I got out of the car. I was like, oh, Alex, hey, okay, we're going to go in. And I was like, oh, wait, I haven't seen you in a year. I talk to you all the time, but I literally treated it like it was a podcast. Yeah. I just moved right into, let's go do this thing. And, it was very fun.
It was cool. For anybody who hasn't been paying attention to this, I don't know how much we've talked about this on the live show, but Nat, in our Patreon Slack, keeps pushing this warehouse. He made fun of him to the point that he was, not to call it out, like kind of upset about it.
This looks amazing.
Well, so here's the thing about it. I went there, this is a couple of blocks away from where I live, and I went there with my family a couple of years back. It's called the Joseph Koch Warehouse, I think is the name of it. And it's in Sunset Park environs in Brooklyn, in New York, if you want to check it out.
Oh,
it's
industry city.
Yes, near Industry City. We went, looked up the stairs, and we're like, nope, not going in there. This time we went in there, and this place is wild. It's like, it is legitimately a warehouse with everything. They have an order. The guy, when we showed up, was like, hey, do you want a tour? And we were like, yeah, sure. 30 seconds of the tour, I was like, I'm not going to remember any of this. This is all over the place. You know where everything is, but I have no idea. But it's a legit warehouse full of comic books and posters and CDs and trading cards. The front is a mishmash of an insane amount of things. The back, they actually have it in some sort of order, but it's only barely in some sort of order. But
well,
like,
I would actually say it actually is exhaustively in order in the back. I went back there, Pete, and I got three individual concrete books.
What?
In the back, which
is man,
like it's legit, very good. I got a Land of Oz book. I got some old Impact comics. From back in the day. I got the Ray trade.
This was walking through here. It was definitely, at least for me, like, okay, I'm going to stick my hand to this thing, see what I pull out because I have no idea what it's going to be. There were things like, it's just so many people's comic collections. I had completely forgotten Jonathan Hickman wrote an Ultimate Hawkeye series, which I didn't end up getting. The big thing that I got, which when he was giving me the tour, we randomly walked by, there was an entire box of one of the first graphic novels that Marvel put out called Havoc Wolverine Meltdown. This is like a prestige, mature series that back in the day when I was a kid, I went to the Marvel offices. I'm sure I've told the stories a bunch of times, but I went to the Marvel offices. One of the editors was like, yeah, grab whatever you want from that box. And Havoc and Wolverine Meltdown was one of the things I grabbed from there. So when we passed by that, I was like, oh, I had that one. He's like, oh, yeah, actually. And he opened it up and it was signed by Walt Simonson, Louise Simonson, everybody else. So that was the thing that I got. That was the thing I was like, I gotta own this. This is kismet. I got a present for you, Pete. whenever we Ooh, see you. Wow. Don't get too psyched.
Okay.
Let's get medium excited. Okay. Michael Eamon has the right comment. Warehouse at dusk. Because that's what it feels like. It is run by like some very old people who are sort of wandering around and occasionally charging people for what they have in their hands. It was wild.
Yeah, but it's amazing. He, when I talk to him, they don't know exactly when it's going to close. They're month to month at this point. It's supposed to be by appointment, but it's open a lot now because people know about it. July at the absolute latest is when it's going to be open till. And I'm sorry to Nat who says, haha, I've been trying to get people here, go here, for almost a decade. He was right.
He was right. It is dope. And honestly, to quote Nat, this is the most people I've ever seen here. I feel like if a ton of people are there buying stuff, word's out. Yeah, it's always open on weekends. Definitely check it out. Maybe they'll stay there if enough people are in there buying stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, we have a bunch of other questions. Oh, you were going to say something else, Justin?
I said you can find everything and nothing there. The best way to go is more and put your hands in boxes and be like, whoa. Because I was like, I don't know if I'm going to buy anything. I spent $30 on amazing books.
Yeah, I will mention, if you want, go as soon as you go in, go to the right, go four aisles down. They have a ton of copies of the second volume of DC's 9/11 collection. Like so many copies, like an entire shelf. So if you're looking for that, you are
a lot of people. Oh my God. We have 50 comments just filled up. Oh my God. Everyone wants that. Alex.
Art says, who are the five guests who have been on CBC the most? My guesses are Fred Van Lente, Langston Belton, Jordan D. White, Alex Segura, and Nat Townsend. That is a great question. I should count that up, but that's probably
Greg Pak's got to be in there.
Greg Pak, yeah.
Five times.
Charles Soule, maybe.
Charles Soule. Gosh.
Gotta get Langston back out here.
Langston, him Jordan D. White be also in.
Yes. But good guesses. Greg Sorry, Pak. We don't have a better answer, but I'll look that up. This is from the Pamian Worms, still my favorite username. Sorry to everybody else. Seems like Godzilla is getting a crossover to fight everyone. What's your go-to fight that ends all other Godzilla versus showdowns?
Wow.
You know, Godzilla, you know, seems formidable, but I don't know. He seems also pretty stiff. Mm-hmm. I feel like from a walking lizard point of view, that's an easy takedown.
You're talking about like the ultimate enemy would be some sort of chiropractor to like really loosen
him. I mean, old age.
You're saying old age. Okay.
Godzilla at dusk. No, I'm saying anyone that comes in behind
old man
Godzilla is... anyone that can sneak up behind Godzilla is going to get a W is all I'm saying. Wow. You just have to come in from the back.
How dare you?
Run
Godzilla's been doing nothing but protecting this world for years and you're throwing him shade.
No, Godzilla's a monster. Devastating buildings. Hates
I am very curious. We are about to get the last issue of Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong, which I've been a little iffy about that series, but I feel like they might crush the landing anyway. And
crush the landing?
Okay. Yeah, because it feels like they've been holding back on so much. And I think they've been holding that back for the last issue in terms of insane Justice League, Godzilla, Kong, Legion of Doom fight. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that'll be fun.
I guess we'll see.
Oh, boy. All right, we got something from Twitch here. This is from Eric MCI. First time, long time. How do you feel when you realize that it was Jerry Dig Dug Duggan, not Dugan?
Oh, yeah.
Do
you wish you would listen to fans who told you how to pronounce his name for years?
That's a shot across the bow to the Pete LePage camp.
Well, here's the thing. You know, you're told to ignore the comments because they'll break your soul. But then if you don't read the comments, there are people trying to help you out. So it's hard. You know, it's a hard balance. And, yeah, it was very hard when we were talking to him when you realize, you know.
If you go back and listen.
Not only have you been saying it wrong, but you also created a nickname on the wrong pronunciation and having a blast with it.
If you listen, when Pete's screaming the Dugs, I'm quietly saying the Dugs.
You just got to listen back, yeah.
Good. Yeah, but other than that, we've never mispronounced a name on the show. This one, Michael Eben, which guest would be on CBC the least?
Great
Grant
question.
Morrison. He's been on it zero times.
No,
we've interviewed him.
We've interviewed
Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
We've interviewed. I would argue that they've been on at least
Denzel Washington
more than others.
Very few times. Yeah. Very few times. Have we?
No, remember, he wandered into the theater one night, and we were like, come on over here.
We're like, hey, you're doing the Trading Day comic. Let's check it out.
Yeah.
All right, this is from Schoeckler. What's something you loved that you couldn't get others to try?
Ooh,
interesting.
Nothing. I literally could think of nothing. I don't know.
Oh, you could always convince people to do everything.
Mr. Salesman over here.
Yeah, exactly.
I could see you in a pickle jelly bean, I say.
I'll eat all pickle.
Mm-hmm. They're not good. I actually did pick those up at Target for Easter. There's Clausen dill pickle jelly beans. Not great. But I did convince my family to eat them. So there you go.
Wow. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I ever got you guys really on board with Starman.
Really? No. What are you talking about? I like Starman.
Did you? I don't
remember.
I've read
all of it. Yeah.
That was a check.
Top check.
Cypher? I haven't gotten you guys on board with Cypher,
nope,
I guess.
Not even a little bit.
Billy Coyle says, how many comics have you guys purchased that you have not read?
Zero.
I will say I
read them all.
Yeah, I read all of them. I haven't read the volume of Woodcuts comics that I bought based on a guess from a couple months ago, and I haven't read my comics from the warehouse yet, but I am.
Yeah. I would say not purchase, but definitely like stuff that I'm sent through the mail. There's piles of that stuff that I'm like, I gotta.
Yeah.
Get
there's graphic novels that I haven't read, but all, smaller comics that I've bought it. Yeah. I've read everything behind me. I've read,
Michael Tiemann says the least, Dan DiDio, right? He didn't show up that one time, but I will say we have been in his office when he was working at DC multiple times.
We used to do
and
a
there
series
was two
where we interviewed
Dan
DiDio's
in the office. It was him and then like a backup version of him, a dude who looked just like him, where while we were interviewing the real Dan, you're kind of also looking to the other guy. You know what I mean? Where you're like, are you
the second guy who also had a shaved head, is what you're saying.
Yeah, no, he did. Pete's not wrong. He definitely looked like a
he's playing shell games.
The previous Pokemon evolution of Dan DiDio is what he looked like.
You think it's like a Dave, the movie Dave situation, where he's ready to replace him at any moment?
They do that always with the DCEIC, 100%. Art says, "What writers, if any, have you literally never disliked anything you've read by them?"
Oh God, I'm not gonna say that.
You're not gonna say anything?
Well, no, I mean, you don't want to, you know what I mean? Because I also hope that maybe someday they'll write something that I'll like, you know?
No, they're definitely never.
The opposite.
It's something anyone who's like just unimpeachable to you.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Man, I don't know.
Shouts to Neil Gaiman on that.
Really?
From my side. Like, what's something he's written that you're like, medium?
The Sandman sequel was okay. The prequel?
I mean, that's fair. Still had some value, I think. Leaning on the artist a little bit more, I'll give you that.
Sure.
Daniel Warren Johnson.
That is a good call.
That's a great call. That's a great call.
Yes. I'm going to go with that one as well. This is...
Hold on, before you move on, just to call back a great, great joke from Nat Towson, Dan DiDuo.
That is pretty good.
One thing I wanted to do, call back is Above the Brim, because your hat looks ridiculous, and I'm glad it's a normal size hat, regular, but when it's tilted upside down,
dead stock coffee, Portland, Oregon, great spot.
Wow, I didn't know you were sponsored by coffee.
If we actually have an answer to this one, if you guys were all working in an office together, who's the first person on CBC to eat another guy's lunch? So,
great call.
Back in the day, we worked for a place called Next New Networks doing Pulp Secret. a show. We did it three times a week. We've talked about this before. Maybe some of you have seen it. It was a news show. The way the schedule would work is we would film into the morning, and then Pete would ingest the footage, and then I would come back and edit it, and we'd get it up by like 2 p.m., I think was the time.
Yeah. And I was doing other stuff.
Well, while Pete was ingesting the footage, Justin and I would go get lunch, and then we'd come back and we'd eat the lunch, and I'd usually eat while I was editing, and then Pete would go get his own lunch. So I think if there was somebody to eat another guy's lunch, it would probably be Pete eating one of our lunches because he was so hungry.
Yeah, I got no problem eating either one of your lunches, but I take my lunch very seriously. So, you know,
that's the one thing you take seriously.
Yeah. So ultimately, when we were on the cruise, you got those roast beef sandwiches every day.
Oh,
that was a beef on wax. That was a beef on wax
every day, dude. There was like a special little spot, man. Not everybody knew about it, but it was money.
Disgusting. We were monsters on that. Our room smelled, I must have been rotting the paint.
Non-stop, that cruise. Not just going non-stop.
I think that was the thing that gave me food poisoning or made me sick, because the last day of that cruise, I could not move. I was so ill. And that was after I was like, Pete seems to like this. I should try.
Yeah, yeah. The last day you tried.
You have an upright stomach. You didn't build up a
tolerance. It was also clearly like the same beef that they had had for the entire cruise.
Yeah, oh, it was, because we watched him slice pieces off it every day. It was the same beef physically. Like, we watched him literally cut it down.
I made such a mistake there.
Yes, we used to eat at a bodega with a buffet when we were working on
it. It was pretty good.
Literally, I ate a turkey leg out of that shit. A turkey leg. I was like, what? I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, what was I thinking?
The bodegas in New York were turkey. Wild, dude. Wild, the different things you can get in a bodega, bro.
I don't
know. Because it was funny, I guess. We spent an entire show eating nothing but pickles and talking about pickles. So there you go.
Do they exist? Are they online?
Gosh, I hope so. I'm sure I have them somewhere on some hard drive. When do you find the time to read so many comics? So I know when Pete reads comics, which is because I get a notification about it. So it's usually like halfway through the day on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It depends on the week, but I think I've talked to this about this before. This is probably very boring, but like, I'll usually read everything except Marvel on Sunday night. Marvel I'll read on Monday night because we get the stuff in advance, and then if it's late, I'll like try to jam through it on Tuesday. What about you guys?
Like Pete, I'm usually in a panic all day Tuesday.
All day.
But you downloaded earlier, because one time I told you that I know when you downloaded.
No, well, I downloaded when you send it, because I'm like, oh, I'll read it over the weekend. And then it comes to Sunday night, I'm like, fuck, I didn't read any of these. And then I'll read some Sunday night, read some Monday night. And then it's like Tuesday is like, let's go.
Yeah,
yeah, straight college for me, where it's like a night before, panic sweat, up all night, just reading, powering through it.
I love that panic sweat every single week. You're like, I'm at the end of my rope every Tuesday.
Every week.
It really is. Like, there's definitely a point on both Sunday and Monday nights where I'm like, Jesus Christ, who did this? Oh, I did.
I mean, I will say, I do. I love comics. I still love reading every comic.
Totally.
And I love reading them in a stack. Because I'm like, oh, just read them earlier. Take your time. And I'm like, no, I always have read comics in a stack. Like, roll through the stack. And so, of course, I'm never going to change. It's just a different day.
Yeah. Schreckler says, if you were here as a guest instead of a host, what would you be here to plug?
Oh, great call, Shoik.
Gosh, I mean, I would plug the Comic Book Club News podcast, which is probably not what he's asking, but certainly that's something that I'm doing every single day. So,
and let me just say, I can't say this enough. I love listening to it. It's great. I love the variety of topics that you cover. This is like sort of paying ourselves a compliment in a weird way, but I like to pay it to Alex specifically because it is really nice. Yeah.
So that, and then, I don't know. That's probably it. Pete, what about you?
What you plugging?
I would plug Justin's story show, and I would plug this show.
My story show?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Characters Welcome.
Oh, Characters Welcome. The character show that I do on Wednesday nights. Definitely check that out. I do that once a month in the city, which you can come see. We just had a great show.
If I was still in New York City, I'd probably have an improv show that I would plug.
Hell yeah. We're going to do a live show, which we can plug pretty soon. I would plug a TV show I worked on.
Are we doing a live show?
He's looking into it. We talked about it in person.
I've been doing some research. I will say, Pitt is booked up. They're booked up solid. Why?
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
They only got one stage now. I mean, they've lost, you know, spaces.
Yeah. No, they have two. They have an annex as well. There's always a million things to plug. More coming soon.
Art says, I've recently listened to the episodes with the never-ending Starman quiz. I was wondering if there are any secret quizzes that haven't been unlocked yet.
Oh. Well, Justin's working on a quiz that he got pressured into plugging, what was it, a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, what was that, the secret Patreon quiz?
Yeah, the secret Patreon quiz.
You're doing that?
I don't know.
We don't need to constantly talk about it. We have enough going on, I feel like.
Also, we can't talk about a secret quiz so publicly. But there are always secret quizzes.
Well, I appreciate what Art's doing, you know what I mean? Because I did have a secret quiz that I didn't talk about for many years, so it makes sense.
That's the real story here, is Pete had a secret Punisher quiz that existed for literally years that no one knew about. That's the insanity that we're dealing
with. We honestly should have wrapped up the show at that point because I think we peaked.
I mean, I'll never forget that thing where Pete was like, I forget. What were the words that came out? Were you like, they finally unlocked my secret Punisher quiz?
I can picture myself on stage in the pit so clearly when we found out about that. That's
half of that show was laughing, 100%. Laughing and just being like,
"Who was the
all
guest?"
Of us saying, what? No idea.
Jordan
that, whatever White? That was.
Kenny
that
Gatewood?
Poor bastard. No.
Frederico Rosa says, "What's the biggest Donald? Number of podcasts you guys recorded in a day?" Oof. Definitely. So. People made, I don't know if we should talk, it doesn't matter. We tape the live show. After the live show, we tape the stack. And after the stack, we tape Week in Geek. So every week, we do three podcasts back to back, no matter what, on Tuesdays. I don't know that we've done more than that. Like, I think we've done two or three.
We've taped early in the morning and then done three shows at night. I know that.
Yes. Okay. We've also done, back when we were doing like the Chilling Tales of Sabrina, we would stack that shit up because they would all those Netflix episodes would drop. So we would roll through those.
I would say maybe four or five.
I don't know if we've done that many though, but yeah, there you go. Good question. Lots of comic book club lore this episode. Why don't we move on with trivia? And for that, I'm going to turn over to Pete LePage.
Surprise! Trivia, Pete. We're doing trivia.
I better pull that up. Hey, this is the lovely part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's a portion of the show where you can win a gift card to Midtown Comics Online because... You know, why not get some comics? You know what I mean? If you had some money, you had some free time, get some comics. You know what I mean?
We already have Art with First Hand Up. Art was on it. You want to choose Art?
Yeah, Art. Let's go. Okay, Art, today's trivia is on comic
book. I would say it's worth it for the art alone.
Oh. Boo.
Nice.
Boo. Today's trivia is on comic book writers and artists, and a small nod to the legend, Michael Jones. R.I.P. Virgil. All right, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Here we go, Art. This comic book writer is also an attorney, a New York Times best-selling novelist, won multiple Harvey Awards, Hugo Awards, as well as Eisners. Who is it? Is it A, Marjorie Liu? B, what's that angry dude who looks like his name? C, Rob Fury?
Angry dude who looks like his name?
Alex, I don't know if you noticed, but the structure of trivia has changed a little. It's the answer.
No, I don't even know who it is.
You don't know what the right answer is?
Yeah.
Oh, well, hopefully Art will type in A soon, since that is the only one that makes
Art
sense.
Art has to write A soon?
Well, he just has to type A, and hopefully he does it sooner rather than later.
Gotcha. Just trying to be clear. I want people to just be aware of how trivia works.
Yeah,
they
sure.
Have to just write A.
Yeah, I was also thinking Charles Soule, but it's Marjorie Liu? Is that?
Yeah, that's correct.
A?
Yeah.
I like correct. That okay. Art guessed the same thing Alex thought. That's a bonus point.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Wow, all right, you're getting $50 from... No, you're not getting that.
Here we go. Question number two. Oh, this comic it. Book writer has won
a... Lake Como.
We'll try this again. This comic book writer has won awards, but is known for Hawkeye, and more recently, it's Jeff. Who is it? Is it A, Kelly Thompson, B, a cross between Dolly Parton and Altered Beast, C, Jolene Wolf?
Dolly Parton and Altered Beast?
Yeah.
What is this a reference to?
You think about it. Jolene is a famous song written by Dolly Parton.
B sets up C, Alex.
Exactly. Yes, thank you, Art. Who is A? Well done.
Who is A?
Here we go. Nice. Last one. Here we go. This artist has won lots of awards, but is mainly known for Why the Last Man. Who is it? Is it A, Pia Guerra? B, what'd you name that trash panda who keeps fucking up your shit? Oh, C, Robin Raccoon.
Alex
got it.
Now I get it.
Alex
took
is
me three.
Following.
It did take
I did last week too,
board.
Alex.
He's been
it's
doing
cool.
this for weeks. He's been doing this for weeks,
Alex. There you go. A is correct, Art.
There we go.
You get an
Congratulations,
A, Art.
You were worth it for the winning alone. Email us at comicbookclublive@gmail.com and we will get you a gift card to Midtown Comics. Pete, what is the secret movie?
Of course, we're talking about the 2014 movie Bridge and Tunnel.
Of course.
Yeah.
Great. Well, as we all do, new comic books come out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to? Pete, again, you want to take this one away?
Yeah, there's so much great stuff coming out. Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 18, super excited for. Six Fingers number 2, The Dead Lucky, Thunderbolts number 4. Some bangers coming out tomorrow.
Justin, what about you?
I mean, I got to give it up for Ultimate Spider-Man number 3.
Ooh.
This book, in a time where a lot of Spider-Man books are sort of in a middle area, this one is really trucking. So shouts to that. Definitely looking forward
to
it.
You like a little jackpot, do you?
That's not what happens in that one. Jackpot has her own book, which I'm also excited for.
And she's in Amazing Spider-Man, which is
there's so many Spider-Mans coming out tomorrow. I got confused about which Spider-Man I was talking about.
A lot of spider things coming out. And I also want to shout out Wolverine number 46. The Sabretooth War thing, I was dubious at first. And man, I've been just really loving how hard this event is going. This is, I believe, the 6th chapter. And man, if it's anything like the 5 previous, it's going to be a bloody disaster.
Two things I'm really looking forward to. Batman Dark Age number 1. This is from Mark Russell and Mike Allred, the same team behind Superman Space Age, so very excited about that. Love them as love Mark Russell as a writer.
I love
Mark
them.
Allred.
Yeah, I mean, love them.
I would marry them.
Wow. You're already married.
I mean, I've been to Michael
and you have
house
a family
and met his wife, and honestly, I would steal Mike Allred away.
Wow.
And the other one, The Goon, Them That Don't Stay Dead, number 1. This is bring back Eric Powell's The Goon. That's very exciting. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Steve Morger for coming out to talk about the Lake Como Comic Art Festival. That's happening May 17th through 19th in
Italy. You should go check it out.
Dennis Robinson, Lycan, Solomon's Odyssey Chapter 3 on Kickstarter until April 1st. David Small, pick up a Werewolf at Dusk in stores everywhere. Next week, we have a big show,
it'll
folks.
Stay with you.
Dan Crothers and David Yu are going to be here to talk about Vivi, which is collaborating with Marvel. Alex Pachtadal is going to be here to talk about Cult of the Lamb, the super successful Kickstarter. And Patton Oswalt and Jordan Bloom are going to be here to talk about Minor Threats, which is expanding wildly.
Wow.
Wildly.
Yeah. Wild. Oh, it's going to be a wild show. So very exciting. Couple of other things we want to plug. Check out Comic Book Club News, our comic book podcast news daily. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, also coming out weekly when they're not talking about X-Men 97. Sons of Gun, our DC podcast. You can check out Podvincible, our Invincible podcast, also recapping episodes of that show. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night.
Take care of yourself out there.
That's the wrong sound cue.
I was going to say, that's some dramatic outro music. I love it.
Shout out to Stray Bodies.
The Phantom of the Club is here.
Shout out to Kenny Chords.
Wow. And Riley Trahan. I love the sensitive flute having
Some day David Tell stand up.
Everybody quiet for a second.
Yeah, this is better outro.